All right.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thanks for the opportunity to speak up here. You know, every once in a while we need a break from Mike, so I'm willing to offer that opportunity tonight. I guess you'll see whether or not you made a good decision here, you know, in a little bit. But so tonight I wanted to talk about a lesson that I think it's kind of intuitive in a way, but at the same time, I kind of really learned about it in through my college experience, especially over the past semester and over the summer, and I think it has a lot of implications for our spiritual lives. But first of all, I just wanted to read a passage that I think is pretty popular, and so we've all probably heard it, but I just wanted to read through it now, which is the parable of the talents, which we can find in Matthew chapter 25. Starting in verse 14. For it is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You are faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Also the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You are faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one who had received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. But his master answered and said to him, You wicked, lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I did not sow, and gathered where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore take away the talent from him, and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness, in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so, I think there's some of the more obvious conclusions that Jesus was speaking about in this parable. One, just the fact that we need to use our abilities for the good of others, and just to not keep them buried away in a hole, but rather we're expected to use our abilities. And then the other that I noticed when reading this passage is how it seemed to be kind of repetitive in the way that it the master talked to the slave with 5 talents, and then he said the exact same thing to the person with 2 talents. And I think this is on purpose, in the way that it shows that there's no distinction between people who have a lot of talents or a few talents. Whether, you know, whatever these talents are, it doesn't really matter if you have a lot or a little. You're just expected to do with what you have. And also the fact that the master talking to the slave with 1 talent, he didn't say, well, you should have gone and doubled it like the other people did. Because maybe that person wasn't as good at working with money, or he didn't have a talent for talents. But he rather said, go put it in the bank. If that's the best you can do, then that's fine. So don't worry about doing as good as everybody else. Just do as best as you can. And I like the passage in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, which talks about how God only asks of us what we are capable. And that passage reads, No temptation has overtaken you but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. And so,
this is obviously talking about temptation specifically, but I think the general rule applies that God is not asking of us things that we can't do. Rather, we're just expected to use what we have. And the main point that I thought was related to this passage is that there's so many times when we have big things that we need to do or things that we know we should do, but when we go to do them, we think, okay, now I'm gonna work on this project. I'm gonna get this done. You're stalled in fear, or for some reason you just can't get going because the task just seems too big or too difficult, and you're worried about all the possible consequences or what's going to happen once you get started. You just don't think you can ever finish. And the way that this applies to my life is, I know I've talked to several of you about the thesis, my senior thesis that I've been working on, which is basically an independent research project that is going to take up a lot of my year. It already has, and it will. But the point here is that this summer I was here working on it, and I would think, okay, now I need to get this done. I have this deadline where I have to get this thing turned in. But then I would go sit at my computer to work on this, and I would think, okay, but you know, I'm supposed to write like 100 pages or 50 pages at least by the end of this, and I'm not going to be able to do that now, and I don't know when I'm going to do this, and there's no way I can do this, and so I would just like freeze and then go play video games for 2 weeks, and then I would be behind on my deadlines and everything. So that's not really an exaggeration either. But so I realized what you need to do, and what I've started to do at least some of the time, is take this task that you have this thing that you know you need to do. You know it's the right thing. You're absolutely sure of that, but you're scared of when you come to it, there's all these things that are getting in the way. Like, it just, the task just seems too big, or it seems too difficult. You know what you need to do right now, but all these things down the line, you're scared of. Once you take the first step, you aren't going to know how to approach the second step or the third step. And I think that this especially applies in our spiritual lives for many different examples. One way that I was thinking that this could apply is that, say you know you need to have a different attitude in life. The Bible talks about how you need to have a loving attitude or a forgiving attitude, but you know that that's such a big thing to change in your life, your whole outlook on life. But really, in the right here, in the right now, you know what you need to do. Like, say there's this one person that did something wrong to you a while ago, and you haven't forgiven them. And so it's not about changing your whole attitude right now, but you know right now what you can do is you can talk to this person and forgive them for what they did, or something like that. You can do this one little thing right now, which is part of the bigger picture, but if you just take a step back from the bigger picture and do what you need to do right now, then you'll be well on your way. And a different example that I had, which I think is a big problem in the church overall, is evangelism, because we know that we need to do personal evangelism, and we know that we're given opportunities throughout the week with different people when a topic could come up, or we could bring up something to do with God or the Bible. But whenever we have this opportunity, we think of all the possible things that are going to happen once I bring it up. What's this person going to think of me? What is he going to say? Is he going to start asking me, you know, tons and tons of questions, and I'm not going to know the answers, and I'm going to look dumb, and I just don't know how I'm going to deal with this once I bring up the topic. So how about I just not do anything? And I think that happens all the time. I know it's happened with me, and I think that this is a pretty important aspect of our spiritual lives, is bringing other people to God. But the thing about like all these different possibilities that are running through your head that are keeping you from getting started, there's so many possibilities that it's really impossible to worry about all of them, because there's also all these good possibilities that, you know, you're probably not worried about at the time. Like maybe the person will ask you a bunch of questions that you actually know the answer to, or maybe you'll at least know someone who does and you can get those people in contact, or maybe you'll just get the person to be interested in God in general, and the person will go out and pick up a Bible and start reading it, which is definitely a great great step and a great thing. But those aren't the things you worry about. And so I just wanted to refer to one of my favorite Bible passages in Matthew chapter 6, which talks about how we shouldn't let worry get a hold of us. And starting in verse 25 of Matthew 6, "For this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat or what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air, that they do not sow, nor reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they? And who of you, by being worried, can add a single hour to his life? And why are you worried about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow. They do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you that even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself, not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith?" Jumping down to verse 34. "So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." And so this, I think, is a great passage that we often go to say that you shouldn't worry about all the things in the future. And this is very applicable to this idea of not worrying about all the future steps, all the many things in the future that are getting you worried or getting you to be scared of what you know you need to do right now. So many times there is this one step that you know is right and you need to do, but you haven't been able to do it because of all these things that you're worrying about, and you can't focus on the here and the now. And so one verse that I wanted to refer to here was from Psalm 37. In verse 23, it says, "The steps of a man are established by the Lord, and he delights in his way." So if you focus on the Bible and what God says that you need to do, then that will keep you in the right direction, as long as you focus on this step here and now and work step by step towards the right direction. And this definitely doesn't mean that you shouldn't worry about the overall goal or the any consequences at all. There is a balance between thinking about the future and planning ahead and worrying about all the many things that you can't control and just doing what you need to do right now. And so I think it's good to worry about step by step, but also make sure that your steps are taking you in the right direction. And then one passage that I think we've referred to several times is in Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 through 14. Which talks about our eventual goal and what we need to be focused on. And these verses read, "Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it." So there are these different ways that our path can be going, and it's the narrow gate that we want, and it's the narrow gate that we hope we're moving towards. So we need to check with the Bible and how we're living our lives to make sure that each step is in that direction. But at the same time, it's only one step that we can really focus on at a time to make sure that we're going in that direction. And of course, it's true that even if this step seems very small and seems to be very important. That can be true. The smallest thing you do can be so important and so crucial, and that can be scary, just undertaking something so important. But if you know what you're doing is right, then that's what you should focus on, even if something is scary. Do what you know to be right here and right now. And one example of someone who did this, and I'm sure that at the time he was scared because of it was such an important step, but this is the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts chapter 8, which we can read about him in verses 34 through 39. This is when Philip found an Ethiopian eunuch traveling on the road, and he saw him reading from Isaiah chapter 53. And so starting here in verse 34, it says, "The eunuch answered Philip and said, 'Please tell me, of whom does the prophet say this? Of himself or of someone else?' Then Philip opened his mouth, and beginning from this scripture, he preached Jesus to him. And they went along the road. As they went along the road, they came to some water. And the eunuch said, 'Look, water. What prevents me from being baptized?' And Philip said, 'If you believe with all your heart, you may.' And he answered and said, 'I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God.' And he ordered the chariot to stop, and they both went down into the water, Philip as well as the eunuch, and he baptized him. When they came up out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord snatched Philip away, and the eunuch no longer saw him, but went on his way rejoicing." And so, in this example, I'm sure the eunuch knew that what he was doing was going to be a huge change in his life, but at the same time, he knew after Philip had talked to him what he needed to do right there and then. He knew what was right, and he knew that he needed to be baptized. So when he saw the opportunity, he took it. So you can see how happy he was after he did it. Just focusing on what you can do right here and now can be a great joy once you realize what you've accomplished, looking back and seeing the last few steps that you've done. Maybe you're here tonight and you need to take some step like this, because maybe you need to take the same step that the eunuch did, because he knew what he was doing, he knew what he needed to do. And so if you're here tonight and you haven't been baptized, but you know that's what the right thing for you to do is, then I'll say what Philip said: if you believe with all your heart that Jesus is the Son of God, you may. And this is the first step into a very different life, but at the same time, it is the right thing to do. It's the if you're sure of this, and if you're sure that it is what you need to do right here and now, then don't let all these consequences and all these worries get in the way, because then it can bog you down and you may never take the first step. Or maybe you're here and you're already a Christian, but you've made a misstep, and you need to refocus on what you need to do right here and right now. If you look at the verse immediately following the Psalm chapter 37, verse 23, then I think this is a good illustration of that. So reading verses 23 and 24, that says, "The steps of a man are established by the Lord, and he delights in his way. When he falls, he will not be hurled headlong, because the Lord is the one who holds his hand." So, if you've fallen, but you're focused on God, then he will help you up, as long as you ask for forgiveness and follow along the path that he set before you. So, as long as you focus on the next step that you need to do right here and right now, and not worry about what others will think of you or all the many ways that your life will change because of what you need to do right here and now. I'd like to ask if there's any way we can help you, if you would come forward as we stand and we sing a song of invitation.